Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of DFV. I'm your co-host Black Cinephile.
And I'm your co-host Brad.
Yeah, there's your co-host Brad over there. And on this one, you know, being a little festive this time around, being festive for the season. We got our theme today, Not So Jolly Santa Showdown. We got, you know, Jalmari Helander's 2010 film, Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale versus Tommy Wirkola's 2022 Violent Night starring David Harbour. And I think this is a pretty good matchup, man.
Oh, yeah. Especially since this is more of a brutal Christmas kind of movie with these two. And ones that kind of take like the standard Santa Claus story and kind of flip it around a little bit to make it a little bit more gruesome, with, you know, Rare Exports taking a little bit more of the Krampus style of the telling of Santa Claus, while Violent Night kind of just goes for a Santa Claus that is from a different kind of background than the normal stories.
Yeah, because I know initially we were going to do Violent Night was always on the table, but I know initially we were thinking about Bad Santa. And I said, you know what? Bad Santa's a nice comedy and all, but he's not really Santa Claus in that movie. We need a film revolving around a Santa. And you had already saw Dear Santa, so I said, well, let's just do Rare Exports.
Yeah. I mean, I would have 100% done Dear Santa for this one, but, you know, I feel like you would never forgave me if I made you do that.
Yeah, I didn't want to sit through that, man. I didn't want to sit through that movie. But I think we lucked out here for sure. And I feel like the best way to start is like to start off with Rare Exports. You know, start off with the folktale film first before we go into like the action comedy. I know how that looks. You know, I'm not trying to pull a fast one. I'm not trying to like go chronological here. I just feel like it just fits.
Yeah, while it is a chronological order, I gotta agree, it does fit a little bit better to go that way. So I'll allow it this time. But yeah, I think, you know, this isn't gonna be a thing going forward.
No, this isn't what we do here. All right, so starting off with Rare Exports, you know, 2010 Finnish film, you know, written and directed by Jalmari Helander, who also made Sisu and Big Game. Was it Big Game or was it Big Trouble? Big Game with Samuel Jackson. But Rare Exports is about, you know, it's about a young boy, you know, who discovers. Well, actually, it's about like it starts off with, you know, a type of package or a type of being that's being like, you know, like trapped underneath by an American British research team. And before long, we realize that this secret package is Santa Claus. But this isn't the fun-loving Santa Claus everyone knows. This is more on the Krampus side of mythology, where Santa Claus is an evil being that, you know, kills children and has, like, his evil elves as minions to, like, do his dirty work. In walks Petari, who is a young boy who's, you know, a little bit worried about this. You know, he's scared of, like, the myth of Santa Claus. And he's curious about what's going on at the base not too far from his house, where they have Santa Claus trapped underneath the ground. And pretty much the film just unfolds where, you know, of course, you know, Santa gets out, and it's all about like, you know, trying to like survive on the night of Christmas. And in a way, that's pretty much like a bare bones plot of Rare Exports. A lot happens, but that's like the bare bones like synopsis going in. And was this your first time seeing this?
Yeah, this is the first time I had watched this movie. And I remember having heard about it in the past as like one of those horror Christmas movies, but it just never was one that I checked out.
Same. I remember when the main art theater was open, this was one of the midnight showings there. Mm-hmm. And I never got a chance to make it, but it's always a film that was in the back of my head. Plus, I liked the director, so I said, all right, one day I'll watch it. So, you know, we threw it in there for this episode. And I got to say, man, I am glad I did finally watch it. You know, I think it's an interesting movie. You know, there's a lot that works with it, but then there's a lot that's kind of off. Like, I feel like some of the comedy is a little off, but I feel like when it works on the drama and more on the horror side, it has a lot going for it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It definitely takes the entire concept of the fairy tales of Santa Claus, especially in areas like Finland, where they have like Lapland. That's where Santa Claus is from. And they kind of like even show you a little bit of those fairy tale books within this movie as it's going on with the, who was it? Pietari? The little boy that's like afraid of what's coming and everything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's pretty terrifying, like the kind of fairy tale like stories that, you know, Pietari reads, and he, you know, it makes you want to fear Santa Claus too. Mm-hmm. And what I really like in this film, when you're talking about the character development, because like I said, not everything in this film works, but, you know, talking about what does work, I like the relationship between Pietari and his father, Rano. I like how, like, there's obviously an estranged relationship there. You know, the mother's not in the picture, but I like that he loves his son, he cares for his son, but he also doesn't know how to show his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
The father. Now, I like how that kind of ties into later on with the father having to trust the son as far as, like, telling him, like, Dad, listen, Santa Claus is alive, he's real, and he's a horrific person. He's evil. We can't let him out. So there needs to be a little bit of trust there. But I like the dynamic between those two. And, you know, as the story unfolds, right, you know, we cut between the research base and you know, the homeland of like Pietari. And, you know, I feel like this film kind of unfolds from like a short film. Right. It was initially a short film that got expanded into a feature. And it kind of feels that way. You know, it feels like you're expanding like what would have been a great short film into a feature film. And I feel like that's what kind of leads to a little bit of the film's cons.
Yeah. And staying on the good side of the film, mm-hmm. the horror element and like the thriller elements of this movie work well. Like, yeah. you're looking at the basic plot points of, you have the body that they find in the trap. You have the fact that something has killed all the reindeer that these people take care of, and as a result, they don't know what it was. They assume it's wolves, and they know that it's because of the one company. I'm trying to remember what the name of the company was that was doing the drilling there. But because of them,
Sub-Zero.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because of them, they were like, oh, they ended up like pushing all the wolves out of that area and into our village, and they killed all of our reindeer, which is our, you know, main source of income here. And it's like, okay, good plot points. Those are good. You know, you have the Sub-Zero people that are very underutilized in the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, very.
But the scenes with them are entertaining. You know, you want to see more of them, especially when they're drilling and you have like the whole thing with the, what was it? The list of things to do. And it was, you know, don't cuss, don't drink, don't smoke, you know, always smile. And the guy's like, what is this? This is a good joke, right? These are construction people drilling, you know, in the middle of the Arctic here. Do you think that any of them are going to follow a single one of these rules?
Right. Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny too. Like, you know, cause it adds to the whole myth of like, you know, don't be naughty, you know?
Right.
Be,
yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny too. So yeah, I agree with you when it comes to like, you know, as far as like keeping the horror there, keeping like a little bit of tension there, the film does work. And, I want to talk about the scene where they initially have him trapped, you know. So obviously, you know, Pietari's father, Rano, and his friend, you know, they go to the military base and they see that accidents happen. You know, they bring a body back that they think is dead, and then it turns out the body's not dead, and it turns out the body is Santa Claus. I love like that kind of realization, like when Pietari, you know, comes into like the house, and you know, the old man's body kind of like springs up a little bit. You know, he looks up. I like the tension of like, that's where the reveal is, like, oh wait, this is Santa Claus, and the kid shouldn't be around this guy.
Right, and they did a wonderful job with that whole plot point, because as the movie's progressing, you know, that was the part of the movie that I enjoyed the most. And when it strayed away from that, it was like, okay, this is where the movie is lacking a bit, is when it's trying to be like, oh, well, here's all the interpersonal connections of all these people. And it's like, I don't really care about that. You're not presenting that in a way that I care about any of these characters. As far as I'm concerned, they're cannon fodder for whatever's coming later in the movie. And that's all that they were presented to me as. It was just like, oh, here's this guy. Okay, he's going to die. Here's this guy. Yeah, I don't care. He's definitely going to die. And this guy, he had all his sacks taken, but he left the potatoes. Yep, do not care. I just want to see his head get ripped off by Santa Claus later on. And that's all I could think of when they were like giving these characters backstories, is just like, you don't need to. I'm just here to watch them all absolutely get annihilated in this movie. I know exactly what's coming. But then it would go to like more of the, here's Santa and we captured him and, you know, he's here. They had him tied up. They eventually put him in the suit in order to like try and sell him back to the company. It's like, hey, we have who you're looking for. We have Santa Claus. And I love the reveal of that when they come and the guy comes out of the helicopter and they're just like, who's this short guy? You know, is this really who we're dealing with here? Whatever. And he's right. Like, that's not Santa Claus. What? That's one of his, you know, helpers. He's saying this guy's an elf. No. This is Santa Claus.
Right. And I don't mind. I think the elves are a little like, you know, like creepy, but like in a good way too. Mm-hmm. But
the leagues of old naked men.
Yeah, it's creepy, you know. But I in my mind, I'm like, okay, evil elves. I guess evil elves would do the opposite of being dressed. So, okay,
right. Of a good elf would be a naked elf. I see where your mind's going on this one.
Right. By that point in the movie, I was just like, all right, we're already on like a zany plane of, you know, existence here. So I'll just go with it. But it's just the thought of like a bunch of naked men running after this one kid that's on top of a bag of like, you know, bagged up kids. And I'm like, that's just so creepy.
It is on the level of insanity where when you're watching it, you're like, this is weird, but it's kind of funny. And then you think about it more and you're like, that's super weird. That's very funny.
Yeah, the more I thought about it, I was like, that was just weird. I don't think this part was supposed to be funny. But then there's the slow motion scene where, you know, the kid thinks it's the end and you see in slow motion just a bunch of naked men just running towards him. I don't like the vision of this.
If it wasn't supposed to be hilarious, they got the tone completely wrong because I was cracking up at that scene. And also, kind of going back a little bit, when they realized like the real Santa Claus was, I like how literally they were just using a bunch of like plugged in stoves and like space heaters to try and like melt the ice around Santa, except for like his horns. Those were the only thing that had like melted out of the ice so far. Right. And it's like the giant like Krampus like creature that comes from folklore. And it's like, oh, this is going to be so cool to like see Santa as this kind of running around and everything. And I gotta say, I was kind of disappointed that they just kind of dealt with him so quickly. And I was like, okay. Well, I guess you're going to ruin my fun there.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, it's a short film expanded into a feature film. You know,
right.
Sometimes that works. Sometimes it's like, all right, we got to stretch what we do and, like, kind of tie up loose ends in the end to keep it at a nice runtime.
Mm-hmm.
I hear what you're saying, but I do feel like it did balance in the film's defense. I feel like it balanced the tension well, where like, you know, Petari was like, you know, being dragged off with the hanger to distract the elves while they, you know, blew up the evil Santa. I feel like that keeping that balance well was good enough for me at that moment.
Yeah, the tension part of it was done well. I just it kind of went out where. At one point, you're like, oh, my God, they won. They defeated Santa. And I was just going, can he come back, though, please? Can we get something from him? please?
Right.
This entire time we've been like leading up to like how terrifying this is, and he never even got out of the ice.
Right, right. Like, where's can we get a flashback or something when it was unfrozen, you know?
Right. It's kind of like if we had a Godzilla movie and like the military was at the beach, and as soon as Godzilla got out of the water, they just fired on him, killed him, and they were just like, yeah, we won. It's like, no, but I wanted to see him destroy the city. Where's the rest of the movie?
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, okay. Okay, I can understand that side of it. I can understand that side of it. I was looking at it from the side of, if they even show this guy, it's game over. Like, you know, if the ice really does melt, it's game over. But then, again, it's a movie, so you can, like, circumvent that. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, there would have been something that they could have done, but I expected to have seen the terror of what they were, like, all fearing this entire time, especially considering this one company was trying to like excavate Santa for some reason. And that part is never really explained. Like I expected with given how much Sub-Zero was kind of built up at the beginning of the movie, that they would have some kind of play at the end of the movie. And they just didn't. They just completely fizzled out.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I would have liked to see more of them. Like I don't mind hanging out with Petari, but I would have wanted to hang out with Petari with Sub-Zero.
Right.
Yeah, and
so that was my main thing with this movie. It's just there's a lot about it that kind of just let me down because I was building up expectations beyond what the movie was setting up, I guess.
Okay. I understand. Now, I like the ending, right? Where they kind of train all the elves to be good Santas.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of leads to the films like the name of the film Rare Exports. It kind of leads to the punchline where they mail all of them out across the world to become mall Santas with the label Rare Exports. I felt like that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was a funny turn on it because, yeah, at the same time, I hadn't thought of the title of the movie being called Rare Exports until that appeared on screen. I was like, oh, there we go. They said the name of the movie in the movie. Thank you. I now it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. All right, man. I mean, other than that, you know, I'm pretty much got my thoughts here. I think the young the lead actor Ani Tamila, who has been in like other Jamari Hallander films, I think he's great as the young boy. Yeah, some stuff about the comedy with this film works, some stuff doesn't. But I feel like it does balance the tension and the horror aspect well. And I think the mythology of it is set well. It's just that certain set pieces could have been expanded a bit more, like you said. And it left me lacking on some things, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have this one as a solid like 3 out of 5. It's just a middle of the road movie to me. You know, there wasn't anything that makes me go, oh, I want to go back and watch that again. It had some good moments. It had a lot of moments that were missed opportunities. Honestly, a lot of this movie, aside from a couple scenes, I've completely forgotten. I just watched it a couple days ago. You know, like it's that kind of movie where I remember when they're, you know, interrogating the elf when they believe he's Santa. I remember them going into the warehouse and seeing like all the stoves and space heaters on, you know, that it's melting Santa's, you know, ice dome. I remember the League of Elves, you know, chasing them down. But a lot of the stuff, like, in the, like, middle of the movie just is completely gone from my memory already.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I give it a solid middle of the road 3 out of 5, too. I'm right there with you.
Okay. So, pretty good one there. But I think that leads us into our next movie. Violent Night. This one coming out in 2022 and starring David Harbour as Santa Claus. We follow the story of the Lightstone family and their Christmas in their mansion, where we have the typical family of people that are sucking up to the mother that is a rich person trying to find somebody that's going to take over the company business, and the one good person in the entire household that is trying to find a way to get her parents back together during this time. It's a bare bones kind of Christmas story, but what really stands out is David Harbour as Santa Claus, who is more of a disgruntled Santa Claus who's done with this job, coming from a more Viking background of Santa Claus's story. And when this family ends up getting attacked in order to get money that they have stolen from the government from a different terrorist organization, Santa Claus gets stuck at their house while delivering presents and ends up getting intertwined in the fight. And that's the basics of this movie. And I know that when this one came out into theaters, because this is right up my alley of just comedic premise and action mm-hmm. combined, that I saw this when it first came to theaters back in 2022. Is this your first time watching this one?
It is. It okay. is. And I'll be honest with you, man. You know, I like David Harbour. I like John Leguizamo. But when I saw the trailer for this, you got to understand, this was around the same time, you know, John Wick was at its heyday.
Yeah.
Nobody came out, which was basically like in Bob Odenkirk is kind of like an older John Wick, kind of like a comedic aspect in it, too. And then this came out from the producers of Nobody. I said, OK, so we're doing Santa Claus's John Wick.
Right. Yeah.
I'm good on that. You know, like, so that was my thought about it. I was like, Santa Claus as John Wick. I'm kind of good on that.
See, while you went Santa Claus is John Wick, nah, I'm good. I was like, Santa Claus is John Wick, I am all in.
Yeah, man. I just, you know, when you see a trailer and I understand for you, it's up your alley. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you see a trailer for a movie and it's the topic isn't really up your alley and you kind of go, I know how that movie's going to be from beginning to end. I don't need to see that.
Right.
You know, that's kind of how I was with Violent Night. And you know what? I saw the movie and, you know, more or less I was right for what I was expecting, but it kind of surprised me too. Like, I gotta be honest. Like, I enjoyed this movie more than I thought I would.
Right. Yeah. I will say it absolutely is John Wick with Santa Claus. 100%. If you're going into this movie expecting that, you're going to get exactly what you're expecting. If you're expecting more than that, you're kind of going to be, you know, looking at the wrong movie.
Well, I would argue that there is a little bit more than that, though.
Okay.
When you're talking about the backstory about Santa Claus being like this old Nordic warrior, I was like, that's interesting. I never heard of that before. That's an interesting mythology. Like, there's more to the character. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Instead of like, you know, a depressed, you know, disillusioned Santa Claus that's, you know, he drinks, you know, he pees off the side of his
of the sleigh. Know,
he's off the side of the sleigh. He's throwing up on bar patrons from the sky. Like, I was like, all right, man, is he going to be like this the whole movie? He's going to be a little girl that brings out the joy back out of him. And all that happens, of course, but I like the backstory of him. I like the backstory of, like, he used to be this violent Nordic warrior. And I'm like, okay, the reason I like that, though, Brad, is because I need a reason to believe why Santa Claus is an ass-kicking machine.
Mm.
Need a reason to believe that. You say, oh, well, you know, he's a warrior from the Nordic days. Perfect in my mind. That makes sense. And I like that he gets beat up a little bit. You know, he's not like a Jason Statham that can't take a punch to the face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Santa Claus definitely is not invincible in this movie. It is actually part of what makes this movie and the fight scene so tense is the fact that Santa Claus isn't magic himself. He just has the ability of some magic where he still fully does not understand himself. And I love how he even like acts disgruntled about that when people are asking like, what's up with this bag, man? It's magic. Well, how does it work? I don't know, man. It's just magic. It's runs on children's hopes and dreams. What more do you want from me? You know, it doesn't try and explain itself at all. It just kind of goes, yeah, we're working with insane propositions here. Just go with it.
Yeah. It's interesting. And I got to say, man, if I didn't have actors in here that I liked, I probably wouldn't like it as much. Of course, mm-hmm. David Harbour is charming as Santa. Mm-hmm. But, dude, I like seeing John Leguizamo as a villain.
Yes.
I think like he really sold it in this one. Usually he's like the sidekick or even like, you know, maybe the protagonist of the movie, but having him literally as Scrooge and as a grown man, that hates Christmas because his dad got laid off. His dad loved Christmas and there was no more gifts after dad got laid off and he held a grudge all these years. It's pathetic, but the perfect at the same time. And he sells it so well.
Yeah. I also love that when they're going over the walkie talkies and everything, they all have like code names that are like Christmas themed. Cause you have right. Scrooge, you have Gingerbread, you have Candy Cane, Frosty, Tinsel. And I love how one of them even goes, are we really going to keep these code names up the entire time? We got to keep code names. Can't say our actual names over the walkie talkies.
Right. I love, yeah, so the code names are funny, but I want to say, like, you know, I mean, I had to settle in a little bit because you got the stereotypical, you know, family that hates each other, right? You know, you got the dad who was a do-gooder, you know, until we learn about a twist in the end, but it's justified. You got a dad who's a do-gooder. You got an auntie who curses and, you know, despises her brother. You got a grandma that like cusses a lot and, you know, not as really, you know, loving. It's kind of stereotypical family that, you know, Santa would come around and bring, you know, hope and cheer to turn them around, you know, from a rated R standpoint. So I had to settle in a little bit, but I feel like when John Leguizamo comes around, I'm like, okay, him and David Harbour made the film welcome to me. I warmed up to a little bit when I'm seeing them on screen.
Oh yeah. Especially because it's your typical rich, greedy, you know, family where the people are, you know, the sister is sucking up to their mother the entire time, even named their, because her mother's name is Gertrude. When she had a boy, she named him Bertrude, you know, after her. And I love how they bring up like, Bertrude isn't even a real name. I'm sorry, Bert, but it's true.
Yeah. It's not a real name. You know, I usually like Cam Gigadent, but Morgan Steele, like that character, I even had to warm up to him a little bit. I'm like, this is the stereotypical, you know, douche mama's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, but I had to warm up to him a little bit. And, you know, later on when he gets killed, I was like, oh, man. All right. What happens next?
Right. Yeah. He was one of those people that they had to make him so easy to hate. And I love how ironically they start up his entire dialogue with him talking about, you know, if I was on one of those flights from 9/11, it would have ended a lot differently with, you know, two terrorists flying out of the airplane while I safely landed myself. And then, of course, they get like ransacked. And the entire time he's like, you know, if they didn't all have guns, we'd totally be out of this situation by now. I would totally just ha and whoa, and they'd be gone and done with.
And then he has his shining moment where he knocks a guy out, or he punches him, and then he just escapes and then leaves everybody and then just gets shot down.
Right, yeah. Which is glorious because I love how even the one person's like, oh, man, he's going to go get help. No, he just ran off. He went to save himself. He's not coming back, honey.
Right. So looking at that, man, I want to say the action was pretty cool. You know, a little too gory for my taste, but overall, I like the choreography. It's very John Wick-esque.
Yeah, it does get very gory in scenes, and I do like how it even, like, makes fun of Home Alone, which is of those movies that personally isn't in my wheelhouse of movies that I enjoy.
You're so bananas.
I know. It's a debate that I've had with plenty of people. I just do not care for those movies. And the fact that they make fun of it in this movie is absolutely hilarious to me.
Okay. I'll put a pin in that conversation, but okay. So the Home Alone sequence. I love how the young girl, what's her name? Her name was Gertrude too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Gertrude.
Okay, gotcha. I love how she's like, you know, like so in love with like the Home Alone films that, you know, at one point she says to Santa Claus, like, okay, I'm gonna set up booby traps like Home Alone. Santa's like, I don't know what that is, but okay.
Yeah, right.
You know, and so in that whole sequence where she sets up like the same booby traps from like Home Alone, I think some are taken from Home Alone too. But I just love that, man. How it just is like an R-rated version of the booby traps in Home Alone. You know?
Oh, yeah.
One guy, he has like a whole like, you know, nail put through his throat.
yeah.
Falls down on a bed of nails on his back. I was like, goodness, if Home Alone was like this.
Right. The best part is like it's getting set up and you're just like, oh, my God, they're totally making fun of how stupid the Home Alone kind of traps were. And then the guy even goes, honey, you realize for it to be a booby trap, it has to be hidden, right? And yeah, it still works on him and everything. It's like, yeah, it's completely making fun of that entire genre type of kids setting up these traps for people that are completely obvious to everybody except for the person that's falling for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's pretty funny. You know, I like the whole dynamic of that. Trudy, her name is Trudy.
Oh, that's right. She goes by a nickname.
Right. So the Home Alone sequence is pretty fun. And I want to say, so when I came into this movie, again, I like the fact that he has the Nordic background, but I came into this movie thinking like, okay, is Santa going to have a bunch of weapons up his sleeve? Like freaking candy canes, like freaking those star things that you throw at somebody and it stabs them, made out of candy canes. Is he going to have like an AR? Is he going to have a Nerf gun that turns into an AR rifle? If all that was going to happen, I would have turned this film off. But I like that Santa just uses what he has at his disposal. Oh, a Die Hard Blu-ray. Let me throw this at someone's head.
Right. A chess set. It, you know, everything. I love when they're even like pulling gifts out and he's just like, video game, video game, video game, video game. Come on. Can some kid just want a sword or a baseball bat or something I can use here? Or a Molotov?
Yeah. One scene I like that made me laugh, you know, when he really goes into beast mode and, you know, starts just like destroying everybody. Mm-hmm. One guy, he takes a grenade. One guy pulls a grenade out. Santa grabs it, puts it down the guy's pants. He walks away before it goes off. I love how he goes, I gotta watch. He turns around and the guy blows up.
Right.
He
goes, oh, ho, 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 ho. Right. This is a fantastic action comedy. It has so many great scenes. And even like things where you mentioned like, oh, would he use like a candy cane? Yes, he does use a candy cane as a weapon. Yes, right. It is amazing. It isn't like played for any kind of like, oh, it's quirky because it's no, he literally is just chewing on a candy cane while he's beating people down until it's a sharp spike and then proceeds to use it to like stab somebody in the neck.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing in the movie before we talk about the climax, I like the whole twist of the squad that's supposed to come, that's supposed to save Gertrude's family. Mm-hmm. I love the whole twist when it turns out that they're in on it with, you know, Scrooge. I said, all right, that's pretty solid, because I was expecting an all out battle between the squad, Scrooge's people and Santa. I said, OK, that would be a nice showdown. But, you know, I like how it subverts expectations, like, OK, no, it's just Santa versus all these people.
Oh, yeah. Especially because the entire time that they're like trying to get into the vault and they're just like, come on, we're on a clock. Their kill team's on their way. And it turns out, oh, they weren't worried about the kill team coming there after them. They wanted to get out of there with the money before the kill team came in, because then they didn't have to split the money. And it's like, okay, you still have the reason for them to be trying to get to it before the kill team shows up, without it just being a, oh, you guys are here. Okay, well, help us now. There was actual reason behind it still.
I didn't even think about that. Wow, that's pretty. Yeah, I like that. I like that part of it too. Yeah. Okay. So I like that. I like the final I gotta say this, dude. I hate it when a movie, I hate it in a movie when there's a big fight that happens, and then, like, you know, like, you got the one moment in writing where the character does something, like, pretty cool, but where was that pretty cool move the rest of the movie? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I call it the Iron Man, was it 2 or 3 where that happened, where Iron Man did a thing where he zoomed around and killed everybody at once, and then Don Cheadle said, why didn't you do that before? Like, and then, like, you know what scene, yeah, I'm talking about?
I think that was in 2. Yeah, that's when they were going up against all the robots.
Right. And he just does this super cool move that could have been used way earlier in the movie. So Violent Night has the same moment where, you know, Santa is fighting Scrooge, and then Santa does this little weird power thing he has where he can take electricity and go in the fireplace. So he does all that, goes up there, you know, and then Scrooge is just left with a bloody stump, and then Santa throws it away. I'm like, why didn't Santa just do that move the rest of the movie?
Because, you know, he has to be near a chimney.
He was near many chimneys in the movie.
So the one time at the beginning of the movie when he's trying to get away, it's not working because
I saw that.
You know, the second time he uses it to escape, to get away from them. But when they're fighting, like in the end scene and everything like that, they happen to come up to like a broken down chimney, and that's when he uses it because they happen to be leaning up against it.
Yeah, like I said, that was a move he could have used many times throughout the film. Like, I get what you're saying, man, but it was just one of those things that made me go, dude, okay.
Why didn't you do it sooner?
Yeah, I mean, it's the end of the movie. I get it. I saw the one scene where he couldn't do it because he didn't have enough spark, but I was like, there's a whole lot of chimneys he passed by where he had spark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think most of it was also during that part. His goal was more to get out of the house than it was to, like, save the family during that time. And it wasn't until, like, after he got Skull Crusher Jr. in the shed that he was like, okay. Because I think he was more or less being like, okay, so they have the kill team coming. They're going to be fine. I just got to get out of this house. And then the kill team shows up, and it turns out they're a part of the bad guys too. And he's like, okay, now I actually got to do something here. You know, I got to save Trudy. She believes in me. I got to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, overall, man, the film was what I expected it to be. I liked a little bit of the Nordic mythology of it. I like seeing John Leguizamo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I give this one a little bit of an inch over Rare Exports because it gave me a little bit more entertainment value. I got this one personally at a 3.5.
Yeah, I have this one as a 4 out of 5. It's up my alley in that, like, insane action comedy kind of space. Mm-hmm. That it's, you know, as soon as they showed, like, what this movie was going to be, I was like, okay, I'm in. You have my attention. And apparently there's a sequel coming out for it, too, which I didn't realize until a couple days ago when I was looking up more information on it, that they have a sequel that's going to start production early next year.
Hmm. Yeah, I read a little bit about that, too. All right, so, I mean, with that being said, man, I think without saying that Violent Night, you know, gets the edge on this one here.
Yes, Violent Night is, overall, when you're talking about doing a kind of not-so-typical Santa movie, Violent Night wins out in this one. It's better for the action, it's better for the comedy. Overall, the plot kind of, like, actually strings together the entire time and holds your interest. So, yeah, it holds out on this one.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I definitely agree. Violent Night wins out on this one. It's the winner. All right, y'all. Now, heading into the after show. Anything you've been watching lately, man?
So, I have actually caught a couple movies this last week here. Carry On, the new one on Netflix.
Okay.
That one, actually, pretty decent thriller movie. It's definitely one where if you start thinking about it, you're going to be like, but why'd they do that? But why'd they do it that way? Why did that happen? But as long as you kind of, like, let all that stuff slide, it's got some pretty good thriller aspects to it. Overall, pretty decent movie. I saw some people complain about the movie, saying that it's like a propaganda piece for like the TSA, being like, look, the TSA is important. But it's like, nah, if anything, this movie showed how inadequate the TSA is at their job. So I don't know if it's a really propaganda point in terms of like pro TSA for this movie.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I want to see that, man. You know, I like Jason Bateman. Jason Bateman's playing a villain. I think that's cool. I like Taron Egerton. Yep. I want to see that. So it's good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's a pretty good one. It definitely went a little bit more than I expected it to in terms of like where the plot went and everything. And yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I know that director. He always makes some solid, Liam Neeson thrillers. So I would think like Carry On is exactly what I expect it to be, like a nice, like tense Liam Neeson like thriller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Like I could see Liam Neeson being in either the protagonist or antagonist role in this one.
Oh, I'd be excited to see him as the antagonist.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha. All right, cool. I think his name is Jaime Collet-Serra, the director. Okay. Okay, Carry On. What else did you see, man?
I also caught the Sonic the Hedgehog 3, new Sonic movie. And yeah, it's a fun one. It definitely has gone more into the side of being like, they no longer have to like ease into doing like a video game movie, and they're just like, no, we're just making a full on video game movie. It's Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, 100%. That's what we're doing as a movie. And given they don't have all the characters from that game here, just doing it with Sonic, Tails, Knuckles, Shadow, Robotnik, they do well with it. It's a fun movie to definitely watch.
Now, let me ask you something, because I've only seen part of two, but I haven't really like watched those films. I mean, I'm a Jim Carrey fan, but I wasn't really a Sonic fan growing up. I was always a Crash Bandicoot kid.
Okay.
Would I still enjoy it?
I think you would still enjoy it. There's points in the movie that they kind of like nod to different things where it's like, no, this is a movie for the fans. And then you'll have like moments where Sonic will do like a dance from Fortnite. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's still a kid's movie. Okay, I got to give you that. But at the same time, it gives you plenty as like the nods to different things in Sonic. Like the Chao Garden is an aspect in here. It goes more into pretty deeply into Shadow's backstory with everything from the Sonic franchise. So it does well.
Okay. Did you ever watch the Knuckles series?
I did not. There is one nod to the Knuckles series that I understood just because I've seen the trailers for Knuckles, but I have not seen the Knuckles series yet.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. I'll take that in mind. Now, I had recently started a show. It's been critically acclaimed. It's been recommended by some people, but I've always taken my time to watch it. I started watching the show From. I don't know if you heard of it.
I have not.
Okay, so it stars Harold Perrineau, who, if you ever watched Oz, he's the main character in the wheelchair. He was also in Lost. And anyway, it's about this small town that anyone that goes into town, like, can't leave. Like, once you go into town, you're trapped there. And it's a small town where when night falls, there's these vampire like monsters that come that you can't invite them into your house. If you do, then they'll eat you. So it's that's what the show is. Now, it's like a sci-fi horror show that's like third season just ended. They're making the fourth season right now. Started off, watched the first two episodes, and it's very good, man. Good writing, good character development, nice tension. It reminds me of the first season of Walking Dead and the promise that had, back when Frank Darabont was writing those episodes. The Walking Dead, the first season, you can argue that it's a zombie show, but it was way deeper than that in the first season. It had great
character. It was more about like the people that had got turned and like the empathy toward the situation than just ooh, zombies.
Exactly. Like, From is more than like a vampire zombie show. You're focusing on the characters in this town. And, you know, I like that so far. So, yeah, I see a lot of promise from this, man. It's very good. I'm excited to finish it. Yeah, so you got that. I think that's all I pretty much, like, you know, saw that's like new. But I want to. OK, so quick with the Home Alone thing. So tell me why you don't like the kid version of Die Hard.
So with Home Alone, first off, the premise of it is just so insane on its own of just the entire movie is like a kid's point of view of what it would be like if you got to be like home by yourself and you had adult money and got to do whatever you wanted and everything. And in order for the movie to happen, every adult in the movie has to be absolutely brain dead at all times. And it's like infuriating to watch because not only do you have the parents that somehow have forgotten one of their kids on several points of contact when they're getting everybody into the car to leave, at the airport checked in, they're on the airplane. You know, it isn't until they land that they finally realize, oh, one of our kids is missing. And then beyond that, you have the kid stuck at home where his first thought is, okay, now I own the place. You know, I wish my parents gone. It's like, oh, that's cute. It's he thinks that, you know, he made that wish happen and everything. And then he like takes a credit card and he goes shopping and no adults question this whatsoever. That kid's just on his own in a grocery store. No adults question this as he's checking out at the grocery store. No adults question, you know, like every.
There was a whole chase scene when he was in the grocery store, like, hey, thief. Like, you know, right. he gained some attention.
Right. But nobody was going, hey, this kid is here on his own. It was when they thought he was stealing something.
Okay.
You know. And then you have like the two idiot kind of robbers and everything where they are going, well, the house isn't empty, but we're still going to rob it anyway. And just the stupid traps that he puts up that if anyone with even a quarter of a brain cell could be like, yeah, this is nothing. We just clearly the steps are frozen, so don't go that way. You know, they put tar on these steps, so yeah, just don't step on that part. I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it was Robot Chicken or Family Guy that like made a joke where it was just like, hey, you know, watch out for that nail that's sticking up there, don't step on that. Oh yeah, good point. Also, don't you see those paint buckets floating overhead? It looks like those are tied to something, so you know, if those swing down, just kind of sway to the left a little bit.
All right, man. It seems like you're just describing to me a 90s comedy, which is what it is. You know what I'm saying? Listen, I get it. Some films kind of grind people's gears. I get it. So I feel like this movie, it just grinds your gears a little bit, huh?
Yeah, it's just everything is so stupid in the movie that I just can't, whenever I'm watching it, because I know it's a classic that people love, and I understand that, you know, it's one of those movies that people are like, oh, it's a Christmas movie. You got to watch it. It's like, there's nothing Christmas about this movie aside from the time that it takes place. That's the only thing about Christmas in this movie. And there's snow on the ground.
Well, he also learns to be thankful for his family. You know what I mean? He learns to be like, you know, grateful for his family because he wishes they were. He makes a Christmas wish in the beginning saying he wishes his family were gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he does learn.
Does he?
I mean, the parents are stupid, but he learns. Listen, no one denies that the parents in the Home Alone films are dumb, but that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, to me, it's just it's annoying just how many like things have to go through in that movie and just how stupid everybody has to be in order for it to exist kind of thing. Like it's just not entertaining to me because it's just going through, because I understand like turn off your brain and enjoy it kind of movies. This is one where I just can't do that.
Mm. Okay, that makes sense. See, at first I thought, so it's kind of the same thing with me and the Polar Express. You know, like a film where I'm just supposed to accept that a bunch of kids go off with this strange conductor man saying, "Let's go meet Santa Claus," in the middle of the night. And nothing about this is creepy. You know, so like I get where you're coming from, where it's like it's considered a classic, but when you really break it down, you're like, that movie, something's not right about all that.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that I just find incredibly boring to watch, 'cause it's just everything about it is so predictable. And whenever you go like, okay, let me start using any point of logic during any of this. Yep, the whole thing falls apart. Gotcha.
You're telling me you don't laugh once when watching Home Alone 1 or 2?
Not really. And I love slapstick.
You telling me when the uncle is dancing in Home Alone 2 and he says, "Get out of here, you little crap, or I'm gonna knock you silly," you don't laugh?
There is a couple chuckle moments. Okay, I'll
Okay.
give you that. There
Okay.
is some chuckle moments, but
Okay.
overall, it's just not like typically with slapstick, I'm all for it. The two burglars, I find them more annoying than funny.
Oh man, Joe Pesci in a comedic role, I think he nails it. Daniel Stern, come on, man.
Yeah, I think they're good actors. It just doesn't hit me for those ones.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so it's rooted in reason. It's just, you know, you're just like, man, it's just not for me.
Right. It's just one of those like classics that everybody like talks about, and they're just like, "Oh my God, everybody loves these movies." And I just got to go, "I really don't." And it's like, "What do you mean you don't like these movies?" It's like, I don't like them. It's just
So you never had a moment where you went in the mirror, slapped your hands to your face, and went, "Ah!" Not once.
No. Not a single time. Even when
Wow.
I did used to shave and use aftershave, even then I never did that.
Wow, that's crazy. All right, I understand. All right, y'all. Well, I'm not gonna push it anymore. Look, this has been another great episode of DFV. We'll catch you on the next one. Let us know which one you love. And, you know, see you later.